our series. Please be seated. Our series has been looking on work, and to do that, we've been doing some interviews of various people, and we have a good reputation here of hearing a lot from folks serving out in the field in various missions work. But the critique came in, you know, we don't actually get to hear from folks like George Gurr, who a plumber at Ryerson College and now one incredible harmonica player. And Mag Story is going to do a little interview. So let me set you up. Come on up. I hope you're on the same level this time. That's about as close as I can get, I think.
Okay, we're good. Hello.
Hello, Max.
I threatened last time that I was going to bring in my big Richard Scarry book of what people do all day, because the point of this is what do people do all day, and now I really wish I had it because I wanted to open it and find the plumber and see if it was like a pig or a cat or a worm or what it was, and like ask how many of the things in the picture you did, but I didn't bring the book.
No page service.
So I'm going to go home and look for it. And it's from the 70s, so if you open it, all the pages just sort of cascade. Which is great, out on the floor. You were a plumber at Ryerson, I didn't know that.
Well, that was the last place I worked, yeah.
Well, see, that's the only one that matters to me, because okay. I went to Ryerson, you see. So okay. Forget everything else I was going to ask.
Yeah, I spent the last 22 years of my career down at Ryerson as a plumber.
Yep. Cool. What were you actually doing as a plumber?
Well, you name it, we did it. Like, at the time, we had over 35 buildings that we maintained. And there are three of us, mm-hmm. and we looked wow. after the plumbing, we looked after the heating, we looked after the students.
So every time a student clogged a toilet.
Oh, we were there.
You
yeah.
were there.
yeah,
now
we
love
them.
I want to know what years you were there, so I know whether or not you feel guilty. When did you retire?
I retired 4 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, after 45 years altogether in the trade. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So going back before you retired, so if I were to say, what do you do all day? What did your day sort of structure? When did you get up? Where did you go?
Oh, well, we were early risers. We started at 7 a.m. at Ryerson before the students arrived. And that way, if there were issues like heating issues and plumbing issues, we could deal with them before the rest of the campus came on board. So I would get up about 5:15 in the morning. And in the winter, it was horrible. You know, you get a dark day and it's snowy. But it was good. I like Ryerson. It's a good company to work for.
Cool. And when did you finish, wrap up at the end of the day?
We finished by 3:30.
Oh,
so it was an 8-hour day, and it was good.
And then you went home?
Went home and had my own things to do, yeah.
So what kind of so now that you're retired, I'm going to say what kind of things did you do in the afternoon, but maybe that's like part of what you do all day now. Some people I know just had more time to do the things they were doing already when they retired, or?
Well, that's partly, yeah. I think anyone that's retired probably says, where did I find the time?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a common thing. I have lots of hobbies and lots mm-hmm. of interests, and like Jean and I, my wife, we share a lot of them together. Like, we do ballroom dancing.
Congratulations.
We help at a community dinner once a month outside of this church somewhere else. We help here at the common table. The odd time Duke will call me for a plumbing problem here, and I do gardening. I love the music. I play harmonica, which never thought I'd be doing 4 years ago. So yeah, it's pretty fulfilled. I think retirement gives you the big word in my mind is freedom. Like you get to choose and fulfill some of the things that you always wanted to do. A little bit more traveling.
Cool. You know? Do you tinker?
Oh yeah, always. Yeah, tinker. There's always a project to do. I guess because of my skill background, there's always things that you think, I think I'll try that, you know?
Cool. When we leave here, we're going to be running out the back door because my father-in-law, who is retired, always has a project.
Yeah.
Many, many projects. So we have to run there to move things.
Yes.
So that's what we'll be doing this afternoon. Apparently it's drywall today.
Oh.
But that's the project.
Mine's painting right now.
What yeah. are you painting?
Well, we're redoing our youngest son's getting married this May. The reception will be at our house. So we have family coming and family from overseas coming that we've never met. So we thought we'd better.
So we know what you'll be busy doing for
the
next few months.
Yeah. So we're sprucing up.
We're
sprucing up the house
for months.
Yeah.
So looking back to your working, and that can be now or it can be when you were going to work. What part of your work, or when you're doing something, feels like a joy? It's the, I feel like I am on the planet to do this. When I'm doing this, it's just fun. It doesn't feel like work. It feels like a joy. It's just...
I think the big thing was troubleshooting problems.
Cool.
Like we would have issues, and a lot of times we didn't have drawings for the buildings because of their age and they had been lost. So troubleshooting, finding a problem, solving it, and usually you worked in a team, mm-hmm. and you would call upon the other chap, and we would pass each other's knowledge back and forth, and it was challenging, and you know, coming up with new ideas, especially working in chemistry or engineering, they would have issues that they were trying to resolve, and we would sit with them and design something, and it was fun that way.
And that was that moment of joy.
Yeah,
that's
I did
awesome.
That.
I solved a problem.
Yeah. And you could go back later and say, I did that, even 20 years ago, later,
cool.
and think, yeah, that's
you see
part
that
of my handiwork.
That's there? There, yeah. That was, I figured that out. What most felt like work? The, okay, I really don't like this, but I
plug
just
toilets.
Have to get through it. Really?
Plug toilets, plug urinals, believe me. You used to curse the kids. Why would they do that? But that was the worst.
And now that you're retired, is there any part of your work life now that doesn't feel like a joy?
Well,
work is a big word, so that's
why. When I retired, I retired before Jean did, mm-hmm. so I made a promise I would do vacuuming and clean the bathrooms for her. And I thought, oh, why would I do that? But yeah. But I still
because
do it.
Because you love her.
Yes,
the
I do.
Answer.
Yeah.
But the extra housework of being retired was not the most fun part of the retirement.
I didn't mind vacuuming, believe it or not. I don't know why. It just seemed like a fun thing to do. Yeah. But toilets, no, I had my share of them over the years.
So now if George has ever fixed your toilet, you will feel guilty. So how can we pray for you, but not just you, people who are in a similar stage of life? So I'm thinking about, at the moment listening to you, I'm thinking about my grandfather, who is an engineer who passed a few years ago, who kept himself very, you know, busy doing and tinkering, and people like my father-in-law, you know, people like you who have had a career similar to yours who are now in this stage of life, and praying for you. What would we pray?
Well, I think the main thing... I've embraced retirement. To me, it's something I really enjoy. And I know a lot of people who are coming up to that age or thinking about it are probably nervous about what do you fill that time in with, because suddenly there's an 8-10 hour time frame that you thought, what will I do with myself? And I think the other thing is financial. Mm-hmm. People worry about, will I have enough to support myself, my family, do the little things that you do. I think people need, we need to pray for guidance for people who are coming up for retirement, for wisdom too, and to embrace it. Yeah, because some people when they retire will probably go back to work and do part-time work just for the sense of needing to belong. And that too, that's important, like to feel fulfilled, I think, that people be fulfilled in their later lives, yeah.
I'm going to pray for you. This is the idea that I had it before, and I'm like, you know what, if I feel... two quick things before I forget. It's your son who's getting married, right?
Yes, my youngest one.
Your youngest. And how many years have you been coming to Perez?
For me?
Yes. All of them.
I've been here about 45 years, 46, yeah. Actually, Jean, my wife, is a lifer. I won't say how old she is, but she's a lifer for the res. And... when I started dating her, I was a non-Christian, I'll be honest with you, and she slowly brought me into the fold by encouraging me, and then once I got here, we had people like Duke and other ministers who've done their work, and the people around us here, the congregation, family.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to pray. Make it short and simple. Dear Lord, thank you so much for George, and thank you for George and Jean and everything that they bring to this church and everything they are to this church and all of the practical ways that they help and they bless, and they are just part of the bricks and mortar and foundation of who we are as a community. Thank you so much that he has found some things to do during his retirement that give him joy and give him blessing and is a blessing to him and his family and this church and other churches. Please may everything go really well as they're getting ready for their son's wedding and the fact that they're going to be hosting it at their house. And we also pray for those in our church family and those we know who are getting near that retirement stage or who are retired and are wondering what they're going to do with their time and are wondering if they have what they need to retire, and that uncertainty, that you would bless and guide people in that stage of their lives, and that you would help us to bless and guide others and to be a blessing to others in that stage of their lives. Amen. Yes, I can give you a hug.
Okay.
I feel bad. You're holding it. Okay, it's kind of cool. I'm just going to say that some people have come up and asked me, like, what questions I'm asking and why. So I wrote an interview with myself, and I'm going to be posting it on the Res Facebook page tonight so you can see what the questions are I'm asking. And the number one question is, Julie just asked me if I can be interviewed by you. Should I be scared? So then you know the answer. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have such strong.
We have been looking at the nature of work. Julie has designed the series for us. And so as we look at faith works, taking care of business. Last Friday, some of you were with me at a graveside. We were burying the earthly remains of Ted Paquette. Ted was known best by most of us as somebody who worked with his hands. Either downstairs in his basement or out in his shed, he would make these little tiny things out of wood, a little piece of wood with cup hooks on it, innumerable lawn ornaments, ducks, geese, signs. I have a clock somewhere in the building. He would go out and buy a bunch of things and then design it so that it would fit in. That's what he did. That's what he was known for. We would sell it at our bazaar sales. But standing by the ice-cold grave as we prayed, the most forcible impression on our minds was not only his death, but as we stood there, our own mortality. We cannot, in burying others, say earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, without thinking of the time when we too shall be laid in the silent grave. See another man in his study on a foggy London evening. In his hands is a pen and a Bible. 140 years ago, almost to the day, Charles Haddon Spurgeon scribbled down something to say to his congregation on a Thursday night after they were going to bury someone. And this is what he wrote. The thought that we are, yet are not, that we are but as shadows that flit across the path of life, coming, going, scarcely come before we're gone, the thought of our mortality has led us to ask concerning our work, is that mortal too? Will that die like ourselves? Some of us have darling objectives, high designs, great enterprises on our hearts. Are all of those shadows? We are as the grass of the field, says the psalm. Are our works also grass? Will the scythe that cuts us down cut them down too? Truly, if we thought that it would be so, it would give double bitterness to the remembrance of our mortality to think that our work was mortal as well as ourselves. Another man, some 200 years earlier, Isaac Watts, inspired by Psalm 90, wrote, O God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come, our shelter from the stormy blast, and our eternal home. It's Psalm 90. Hope and help come from the eternal God. But life is fleeting, and in it we face death and God's wrath. Yet somebody else who's gone. The psalm is attributed to Moses. Perhaps it was written just before he died. Set it in his context. Wandering in the desert, leading the people for 40 years, while God endured their stubbornness, their cruelty, their insurrections, their unfaithfulness, and their wanting to go back to Egypt. And all along the way, day in, day out, they are burying their friends and their family until what's left of that original crowd is just a handful. And then Moses himself denied the privilege of entering the promised land. He could bring them to the edge, but that was it. He would have to trust somebody else with taking it across the Jordan. So I can imagine him asking, is this going to last? We've gone through all of this. Will the people last? Will it crumble into dust as each person would? Time, like an ever-rolling stream, bears all of us away. We fly forgotten as a dream dies at the opening day. Actually, one of the verses of Isaac Watts's hymn has been lost to us. Like flowery fields, the nations stand pleased with the morning light. The flowers beneath the mower's hand lie withering ere 'tis night. You and I become aware of our own mortality only in rare lucid moments. When we come up for air and see above the death-denying consumption machine that enslaves. But to wonder whether our works will survive us, that's just too much to bear. I mean, it's hard enough just trying to keep up without wondering what's the point of it. Even if we capture the elusive rings of wealth and fame, our 15 minutes evaporates like Justin Bieber's innocence. And strength wanes under the weight of futility. But Psalm 90 ends with a prayer. Let your work appear to your servants and your glory to the children. Let the beauty, let the favor, let the majestic glory of the Lord be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands. Establish thou the work of our hands. We did our vestry report this year, and Robert Fawcett was gracious enough to print it in full color to capture the beauty of the artwork. God has laid beauty on your hearts, and you have published this. I'm looking at it. I'm not going to call you by name, but I see many of the artists whose works are in here. Such beautiful things you see. Will it last? What of what you have done do you hope will endure after you're gone? And even if it endures, will people understand it, what you have done? David Macaulay's classic, Motel of Mysteries, is about archaeologists who in the year, far in the future, 4022, dig up what they think is like a burial tomb of the pharaohs. Only in reality, it's one of our motels. And so they misread the whole of it as they look through it. Here's how they describe the motel room. Everything faced the great altar, including the body of the deceased, on the ceremonial platform. In its hand was the sacred communicator, and around its wrist a flexible golden hand bearing an image similar to the altar. A statue of the deity Wat, the lamp, representing eternal companionship and enlightenment, stood faithfully next to the platform. Also in the chamber was the cylindrical ICE, the container, which they translate as the internal component enclosure, designed to preserve the major internal organs of the deceased for eternity. The ice container, yes. And one of the archaeologists moves into that room that George Gurr loved most and figures out how to put on all of the items they find there. Here's Harriet. Toilet seat on the back of the head, held on by toilet paper, toothpaste for earrings, the bath tube stopper around her neck, and the toilet seat as her necklace. Will our works be understood even if they're remembered? Moses pleads that his work and his people's work survive them. Their work, our work, will endure for all eternity if it was the work of the Eternal One. Moses prays, notice that the anger of God no longer be on them, but instead the beauty, the favor, the majesty of God. Our temporal work brought into God's eternal work, the transitory becoming everlasting. Our fleeting breath carried aloft on the breath of God. The meaning of your work is not established by what you do or how hard you do it or even how many appreciate it. Our work has lasting meaning in so much as it is established by our help and our hope, God, the author of all meaning. So I'm going to invite you to turn this opportunity, this time, into a prayer. Here's how it's going to work. 2 years ago, the corner of Queen and Dufferin, blackboards were put up with this invitation. People were asked to respond to this statement, "Before I die," and then in small print it says, "Before I die, I hope to." And then you can see how enthusiastic people were to fill out publicly what their hopes were. All kinds of things. I hope to, before I die, I hope to live. Before I die, I want to live with Sarah. Oh, okay. Yeah, before I die, I want to fly. And then right in the corner up there, I want to love like Christ. Everybody filled this in. All right. So if you were given the challenge, which we're going to give you now, to join Moses in prayer, how would you respond to this? After I'm gone, I hope. What do you hope will survive you about the things you do, about how you engage yourself with the world? I'm going to ask you to get up from where you are, silently, quietly, find, there are 8 stations with blackboards, and let's see, there's 2 up here, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 there, and another one out in the hallway, and another one over by the library. Write on it something you hope that you have been doing that somehow will survive you, and turn it into a prayer. For example, do you hope that your children will follow Jesus? That after you, the glue of your family, goes, that they're still able to stay together? That your crafts that you make are loved? That you are remembered? That you made a difference? That they sing your song? If you can't get up or don't want to, write it out on a piece of paper and give it to somebody, and they'll come back before they're done and write it out on one of these boards. Let's see if we can fill these boards. We're going to give you 5 minutes for that. Then we're going to just lead you with, O God, our help in ages past. A few other things, I will offer a prayer, and that's it. You're looking at me like there must be something else. No, there's not. Take a piece of chalk and be kind to each other. Don't all go around the one space and get started. Let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us. Establish thou the work of our hands. Establish thou the work of our hands. What do you want God to establish? Go. While the others finish up, let us pray. Ask you to take your hands and imagine the things that you do in it, your instruments, your plumber's wrench, your carpenter's hammer, your keyboard, your mouse. Imagine your friends and families and your companions, those who you work for, your customers, your clients. Put them in your hands. And hold them before the Lord. And answer with me, all that I am, Lord, I place into your hands. All that I do, Lord, I place into your hands. Everything I work for, Lord,
I place into your hands. Everything I hope for, Lord, I place into your hands. The troubles that weary me, I place into your hands. The thoughts that disturb me, Lord, I place into your hands. Each one who I pray for, Lord, I place into your hands. Each one who I care for, Lord, I place into your hands. If you're done in the back, if you want to come and take a seat, please do. I see a lot of people milling about. You can come forward. We place into your hands, Lord, the choices that we face. Guard us from choosing the wrong way that leads to heart pain and the secret tear. You who are rich in counsel, show us the way that is plain and safe. We place into your hands, Lord, those for whom life is difficult, those who have difficult decisions to make and who honestly do not know what is the right thing to do. We place into your hands, Lord, those who have difficult tasks to do and to face and who fear that they may fail in them. Those who have difficult temptations to face and who know only too well that they may fall to them if they try to meet them alone. We place into your hand, Lord, those who know that they can be their own worst enemies. We place into your hands, Lord, those who have difficult people to work with, those who have to suffer unjust treatment, unfair criticism, unappreciated work. We place into your hands, Lord, those who are sad because someone they loved has died, and also those who grieve for the loss of a relationship with someone they thought they once knew, and any who are disappointed in something for which they had hoped for very much. We place into your hands, Lord.